Hell Yes Life, episode 44. Welcome to the Hell Yes Life podcast, the show that helps you come alive so you can live a hell yes life. I'm your host, Norman Bell. Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Hell Yes Life podcast. I am your host, Norman Bell. I hope you are doing great today. This is the place to hear inspiring stories and actionable tips from our amazing guests that will motivate you to live your Hell Yes Life. The Hell Yes Life podcast releases new episodes every Tuesday. Hell Yes Lifers, if you want to write a review, please visit hellyeslife.com/HYLiTunes. Okay, let's get into today's episode. Today, my guest is Bob Stromberg. Bob is the master of creativity. Bob travels continuously, performing his very unique blend of original story, stand-up, and shtick, as he calls it. His work has left lasting impressions on Fortune 500 companies, raised multi-millions for nonprofits, garnered literary and theater awards, and broken box office records in the U.S. and Europe. The London Times said that he is a genuinely funny man, and the Chicago Sun-Times called him a mesmerizing physical comedian. And if you haven't checked this out, he has YouTube videos online. Hundreds of thousands of people have viewed these videos of his hand puppetry work, so you got to check that out. Bob has joined a very small group of elite artists who have stayed prolific and profitably busy for over 40 years. Now he wants to share how he has done it. He's created an online class called Mastering the Craft of Creativity, in which he shares three profound, transforming disciplines that lead to creating a rich personal reservoir of original ideas. I think you're really going to enjoy my conversation with Bob. We talk about a lot about the creative process, not just as it applies to artists, but also entrepreneurs. You'll also hear about the night Bob created his first shadow puppet by candlelight. You'll hear about his appearance on a TV show hosted by Steve Harvey, and much more. Without further ado, let's dive into my conversation with Bob Stromberg. Bob Stromberg, welcome to the Hell Yes Life podcast. Are you ready to tell us about your Hell Yes Life?
Hell yes, Norman. Let's do that.
Let's do it, Bob. All right. Really excited to have you on the show. Looking forward to hearing your story and your thoughts about creativity, one of my favorite subjects. But first, I always like to ask our guests, what is your Hell Yes? And by that, I mean, what is that thing that really lights you up and makes you come alive?
Yeah, mine is being in the creative moment. And what I mean by that is, actually for your listeners out there who feel as though maybe they've not found their own Hell Yes moment, I believe this could be theirs as well. I believe that we were all made to create. I don't believe it's a gift that just some people have. I believe that creativity is a gift that all of us have, in as much as something of creativity is woven into our very genes. We're born with it. But we're not born creative. What we're born with is a capacity and a desire to experience creativity. And we all begin using this gift almost immediately. As we move from infancy into early childhood, we begin experimenting with this gift, which is just a capacity and a desire. We begin experimenting with it through the process of play. And I have people say to me all the time, Norman, they say, I'm not creative. I've never been creative. My brother is. My sister's the creative one in my family, but I couldn't be creative to save my life. To which I say, well, you're probably right. I mean, if you say so, you know yourself better than I do. If you say you're not creative, you're probably not. But you used to be. when you were a baby. One day you rolled on your front and then to your back, and you couldn't wait to try it again. You got up on your knees and you rocked back and forth for about a week, and it was just thrilling. And you learned that if you did that thing with your nose, you could make your parents laugh, and that tickled you. And then you crawled and you piled blocks up. You held a crayon in your hand and pulled it over a piece of white paper, and that was exciting. Or in the case of my four-year-old son, who's now an artist, by the way, he's a grown man, you found that you could take that pink magic marker and color in all the white flowers on mom and dad's new couch. That was an exciting afternoon in our life there. but we were doing what we call play, and that's the gift aspect of creativity. The medium was play. All of our play as children was creative. In fact, even as adults, when we experience creativity, you know this, Norman, it's fun. It feels like play. So what happens to that gift? Well, if you're a hungry child in Africa hauling water for 4 or 5 hours a day, there's not a lot of time or energy left for play. And if you're a child in the Western developed world, when you go to school, you discover that you have to give the one right answer to the question at the end of the line. And you have to write the one right, correct word in or number in. And you have to circle the one correct multiple choice. And it gets harder and harder to experience that gift of creativity, because creativity does not work that way. Creativity is not about finding the one correct answer. Creativity is about playfully trying many correct answers. The gift is still there, but you can't open it up. So you begin to feel that you're not creative like other people are. It's apparent they are. You can see it, but you feel like you're not creative. That's why it's helpful to understand that creativity is not only a gift, that's the capacity and the desire, but creativity itself is actually a craft. It's a process. It's a skill. And like all crafts, you can get better and better at it by practicing the creative fundamental disciplines of creativity, as long as you know what they are. And that's my hell yes moment when I am in that creative process. And I've experienced this since I was a child. I didn't know what it was, of course. I was just playing. And it's only recently that I've kind of discovered, oh, that's what it is. But to be in the creative moment, whenever or wherever that is to me life-giving.
Love it. Love it. Love that answer. And, you know, you really delved in, and I can hear your passion around sharing that information about creativity and helping people tap into that. Really, it's music to my ears. Just to briefly share that I worked with kids in my 20s and like preschool age kids. And I really have taken that experience with me and just remembering, like, and I say it on the show too, like, we were all babies, we were all children, therefore we were all creative. We were all, you know, wide-eyed and spontaneous and improvisational. And, you know, we may not feel that way today, but we can tap back into that. So I love what you're doing there. Before we go, and I definitely want to delve more into that aspect of our conversation here, but I want to hear a little bit about your story before we get there. So, can you take us back? So, tell us a little bit, an overview of who you are and, what you're up to now and what you've been doing. Actually, it sounds like for the past 40 years or so.
You bet. I recognized, it's been, I guess, 3 years ago now. I recognize that I'm sort of one of an elite group of artists who have actually managed to do what I love doing, writing and performing on my own, pretty much, for 40 years. It's a pretty rare thing. In fact, I was in our basement back in 2015, September 15th of 2015. I was in the basement of my house digging through some old boxes of books, and I found some old work calendars. And just for the fun of it, I found the earliest one I could find, which was 1975. And I opened it up and looked to September 15th, which was today's date. And there it was, my first professional booking. I came upstairs to my wife and I said, Judy, look at this. This is our 40th anniversary doing this. And she said, And that was the extent of our celebrating right there. That was pretty much it. So I feel really fortunate to do what I do. I'm a comic. I've always been a comic. I do. I describe my comedy as stand-up, story, and shtick. So it's sort of a broad type of comedy. But I've been doing that now for 40 years. There have been a number of reinventions through the years, which has been one of my... It's probably my biggest challenge is of how do you keep doing this? How do you keep doing what you love doing? But that's what I've been doing all these years. So
that is awesome. And, you know, I just is so admiring of someone like you who can go out and do that. I won't go into the story, but I've had a couple of traumatic experiences in my younger days of trying out stand-up comedy that scared me away from going back.
So maybe
I'll have to challenge myself to get back up there at some point. Yeah. But maybe tell us a little bit about, what kind of material do you do in your stand-up routines? You talked about story and shtick. I know I saw online that you have some quite popular videos of some of your shows around hand puppets, but it looks like you do a wide variety of different things. What kind of stuff do you do?
Well, it is a wide variety. Last night I had sort of a highlight, actually. I had the opportunity to be on a show that Steve Harvey hosts called Little Big Shots Forever Young, which is sort of a spinoff of his Little Big Shot show where he interviews and watches children do their talent. And now he takes these supposed little big shots who were little big shots and now they're grown up. So all the talent has to be over 60 years of age. So I'm on the very young spectrum there. I'm 65 years old and there are people up to 104, 105 doing this show. But it was really, really fun to be on national TV with Steve Harvey in front of 6.6 million people. And so that was really, really fun. So I do story. I tell funny stories. I tell stories from my own life. And a lot of it, again, feels very much like stand-up comedy. There are a number of comics who do that. Brian Regan does it. Many, many comics do story comedy. But then I've developed skills through the years. Some of these are just creative things that I've grabbed. The creative process, by the way, as I've defined it, the fundamentals are as you go through life, you grab what grabs you emotionally. Anything that you look at, that you see, an experience, a memory where something, it grabs you in some way emotionally, you grab it back, which means you write it down. So you don't lose it, or you speak it into your phone. That's what most of us would do now, so that we don't lose it. And then over a period of hours, days, months, weeks, even years, you keep going back to that list of things that you've grabbed and you interrogate it. How could I use you? What could I do with you? Could you be a character in my book? Could you be a book? This feeling that I have about you. Why do you keep grabbing me emotionally? You interrogate it. And then we have this, every artist knows this feeling. I describe it as the aha moment. It's the moment when during your interrogation, what you've grabbed, that thought, it's not an idea now, it's just a thought or a memory or experience. That thought becomes an idea where you go, aha, now I know what I can do. It's so exciting. And then the third step is you transform it into what it should be. I say this is how you get your masters of creativity, G-I-T. You grab what grabs you, you interrogate it, and then you transform it into what it can be. So I have grabbed things through the years. My shadow and my hand shadows are one of those things. I was sitting in a bathtub 25 years ago, with a candle on the edge of the tub. The reason I don't normally bathe to candlelight, but this particular night I was in a ski lodge and the power went out and there was a candle there. So I lit it, put it on the edge of the tub and I filled the tub before the water got cold. And I was sitting in the tub and I had a plaster wall next to me and the candle cast such a beautiful shadow with my hand and I started moving it around and this gorilla appeared. I actually created what looked remarkably like a gorilla. And then I didn't dare move because I had my hands in this shape and I thought, I'll never remember how to get back here. But I very gently took my hands apart, then put them back. And there it was again. The next morning, I was speaking at this conference and entertaining at this conference. I was standing up in front of 1,000 people and I had the spot operator put a round spotlight on the back wall. I could make a shadow with my hand. And I had the video guy focus in on that shadow and make it big into the big screens up above. And I made my gorilla shadow. And people went nuts. And, and I realized, oh my goodness, I've got something here if I want to work on this. So I actually then, that was something I grabbed. It wasn't an idea. I'm just kind of making shapes. I'm just playing around. And then, but then I interrogated that and realized, no, now I've got to learn a lot of other shadows. I can create stories with these shadows. And it's really become now, after 20 years or so, it's become sort of a calling card for me, sort of a signature piece that people are always saying, well, you've got to do the shadows. You have to do that. So my whole career has been like that. It's just been grabbing thoughts that grab me and interrogating them to try to find the truth in them and then turning them, transforming them into stories that I can tell or pieces that I can tell or shtick that I can do. I have a guitar. I was doing a piece with a guitar for years, a comic piece, a group whistling bit. And people, it was very funny and people just loved it. They still do. But it got to the point where I was traveling where, as you know, it costs you, you have to pay for your extra bags. This was about 10, 12 years ago. All of a sudden, I was having to pay $35 for every leg of my flight. Every time I'd stop, I'd get back on a plane, another $35. And it was costing so much money. And I said to my wife, I wish I had an inflatable guitar. I wish I could put my guitar in my suitcase somehow. And she said, well, you should figure out a way to do that. So I actually started working. I took pictures of my guitar. I pasted it on corrugated plastic. So it's really thin, 1/4 inch. And I broke it into parts and put magnets in it so I could pop this guitar together. And then I figured out a way to trigger the sound so that it absolutely looks like a real guitar, except I construct it on stage and then I do my piece. And it's really, really fun. Well, that's just, again, it was that grabbing and interrogating and then eventually transforming it into what it could be, which has been a wonderful piece for me for many, many years now. So really, really fun.
Love that. Love all that information. So, and just to go back to that story about the gorilla and how you said, oh, I don't normally bathe by candlelight. It's interesting. So what you did was you took it's funny to think that if that situation had not happened, that the lights went out at that place, that might never have occurred. Right. So
it wouldn't have. It was a pure happenstance thing, but that's what life is.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever happens to you today is something that you have no idea what it's going to be. So you have to have your eyes open for things. And I miss things sometimes, but I'm training myself continually and have been for years now to just grab. I grab things every day. I speak into my phone. Yesterday I was walking. My wife and I were walking. It was early morning because we were trying to walk before it got too warm here in Minnesota. And, we walked by a beautiful meadow, a grassy field that went a long, long distance. And every 4 or 5 feet, there was a huge spider web I could see it in these fields. And the reason I could see it is because the dew had settled on those spider webs. It was beautiful. But if you were later in the afternoon, if you walked by that, you wouldn't see a spider web in the whole field. Now, I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's a story. I don't know if it's an illustration, but it caught my eye. And I didn't have my phone with me, unfortunately, to snap a picture, or I would have. But I came back and I spoke into my phone, spider webs covered with dew in the field. That's all I needed, and I will remember that now. And it means something. It was just an experience, a thought that I had, and now I interrogate and say, well, what does that mean? What does it mean? There's an illustration in there somewhere. That's the process of continually grabbing what happens.
I love that. And, you know, I have some I have a creative background as well. I've done some theater and a little bit of film and so forth. So I totally identify with where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I do want to think about our listeners out there, and I will just play a little devil's advocate that maybe there's some people that are out there listening to this that, yeah, as you said at the beginning, is like, oh, I'm not a creative person. These guys are talking about art and, you know, theater and creativity. I'm a business person. But I know that, you know, as I'm kind of moving into entrepreneurship here, that everything you just said, I think applies to that field as well. So do you take these ideas and so forth and apply it across a broad spectrum of audiences?
Yeah, the creative process is the reason that we as a race have even continued to exist. I mean,
right.
There was nothing artistic about discovering fire or discovering how to create foods that are chewable and taste good, and or discovering different types of materials to build homes or materials clothing for us to wear. There was not the idea wasn't like, oh, I'm going to be creative today. No, the idea was to survive. And that's what the business world is about too. It's about surviving. How do you as a business person, man or woman, keep your business going? You've got to be adjusting all the time. You've got to be awake. You have to be able to see what's happening around you. And often we get so focused in that we don't realize the world is changing. So we've got to be awake. It's interesting. I wrote a play years ago, and this was part of one of the big breakthroughs for me. Let me talk to you about, I was telling you that the biggest challenge for me was how do you stay busy all of these years? And I had a real challenge back about, I guess it was close to 25 years ago. I was at the peak of my career at 42 or 43, and I was able to make money for my bookings that I'd never made before. And I was booked up 10, 11, 12 months ahead, which gave me a great sense of security. But I found myself empty. I wasn't creating. I wasn't experiencing my hell yes moment anymore. I wasn't creating. I was just dry. And I realized I'm only 42 or 43 years of age here. I've got a lot of years. How am I going to keep this going? And then I sat down with some buddies, and we had this was like seeing the spider webs, or this was like seeing the shadow on the wall. Just as a part of our conversation, somebody said, we should write a play. And I remember saying, well, you know, we're all three of us are so busy. They're both performers. All three of us are so busy. If we don't book it, we'll never write it. And one of my friends said, well, I'll book it. So he found a place for us to do it. And we had about a month to write a play, and we did it. And there was somebody there who said, would you like to bring this to our theater here in Minneapolis next year? As a full two-act play, we'd work on it this year, make it better. We said we'd love to do that. So we opened up for 6 weeks downtown Minneapolis with a play called Triple Espresso, a highly caffeinated comedy. This was in the spring of 96. We opened for 6 weeks thinking, it was scary because we were thinking if we might lose our shirts, if not our homes here, because we couldn't work for 6 weeks because we were going to be doing this play seven times a week, five nights a week. So anyway, we opened up that play and it ran for 13 and a half years without stopping here in town.
Wow.
Nine weeks in, we recast it with some other guys so we could keep it going in Minneapolis. And we went to San Diego, and we opened there for 9 weeks, and it ran for 11 years. And anyway, we ended up in the West End of London and 2 years in Dublin, Ireland, and all this. It was one of those times in my life where there was a big challenge for me, like, how am I going to keep my career going? But I was awake enough to realize that when I heard a conversation with my friends, this is a moment I need to take advantage of. I need to be awake. I need to listen. And this is, business people are in this situation all the time, but they have to be emotionally awake to see that kind of stuff. When we were in Dublin, Ireland with the show, I took up painting, and I ended up being painting for 4 or 5 years. I had done a little bit in college and enjoyed that. I was an art major, but I wasn't a very good painter, but I took up pastels. And in the process of painting for 5 years, I realized that I was seeing the world differently than I had seen it before. I had never noticed that shadows aren't gray necessarily. I mean, sometimes they are, but often not. Clouds are seldom just white. And the one that really amazed me is chrome. If I said to you, Norman, we're going to paint a chrome bumper here. What color would you choose?
I'm not sure. Silver?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, right? I mean, almost everybody would say, yeah, but we'll paint it silver. But chrome bumpers are almost never silver. Unless they're reflecting the surface of the road, then they might look silverish. But they reflect trees. They reflect any color that's around them, the sky. They reflect another car next to them. And if you look closely at a chrome bumper, it is just a mass of bright, beautiful colors. And if you recreate those colors, it actually looks like chrome instead of a painted silver bumper. I had developed over 5 years of painting, I had developed in my mind a new neural pathway. I could see the world differently. Painting helps you wake up visually. But being creative, practicing the creative disciplines of grabbing and interrogating and transforming, that helps you wake up emotionally. And that's where the real gold is. If you can wake up emotionally, and that's the same thing in the business world. Most of the podcasts that I do, like yours, by the way, where I'm the guest, most of them are business podcasts. These people have to be creative, and they have to wake up emotionally in order to be creative. And if they don't, they'll probably be in trouble with their companies. So I think it's really important. Any kind of creativity is the key to what we do here in the human race in terms of being successful and surviving. Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting what you were saying. So you were kind of at the peak of your career, but you realized creatively you were sort of running dry. And so then this idea for this play came up. And I was reading a book somewhere where it was talking about this person had said, I've found that it's really the side projects that I do that end up really taking off. And it's kind of interesting that this thing that you just tried to wedge in there, you had a month to work on, ended up being this long time running play. So that was really interesting. So let's get in there a little bit for our listeners on, you've talked about the three keys is grab, interrogate, and transform. Now let's just break that down for our listeners who might want to, get a little bit more in touch with their creativity today. So what kinds of things could they do? Something that you might talk about in your course that somebody could implement today?
Well, I have exercises that I do in the course. And one of them that I enjoy doing is working with photographs. I've done this extensively myself. My parents years ago gave me, for safekeeping, our family photos, which were in slide formats. We had 20 boxes with slide carousels in them, 100 slides per carousel, and so roughly 2,000 family slides. If you remember, there was a time when folks used to have family slideshows. It's funny to think of now. Sometimes if I'm with teenagers, they don't even know what a slide is. I'll have to explain what a slide is to them. But we used to have family slideshows. Many, many families did around America, Canada. And so I began taking these slides out one by one and just looking at them. And I often tell my students that if you look at this slide, you'll see within the frame, within that little cardboard frame, identify everything in there. Look at this. Okay, not just the people, but the clothes that the people are wearing. Is that your grandma there? Do you remember that dress that she used to wear? Your grandpa. Do you remember that coat? Do you remember how that coat used to feel? What was it made of? Do you remember, how about smells? Do you remember smells? How about sounds that you, do you begin to hear sounds? Do you remember your grandpa used to play the harmonica? Do you remember these? And you begin to collect all of this info about these characters in the photo, or about the places in the photo, if you're just looking at them. And you just kind of catalog all that stuff within the photograph. Then I tell people, try to be very aware of where, when you read this list that you've made, where do Are you taken into an area outside the frame? Do you start to think of stories that happened with your grandpa? It's not in the frame now. It's not in the actual picture. But do you start to remember this, a story about him? Collect those things. Collect those things. All of these are thoughts. Neuroscientists now teach us that every thought that passes through our mind has an emotional component. Every thought. Now, when you think about during your day, thoughts are flying through your mind so fast, and you're not even aware of most of them. All of them have an emotional component. As you begin to do an exercise like this, where you start collecting things in the photo and then allowing your mind to go outside of the frame of that photo into other stories that come to mind, and you're collecting those things, you begin to notice that there is an emotional component to all that you're grabbing there. And then you begin to interrogate that. Why do I remember this as opposed to something else? The mind is, it's just remarkable, all of what's in there. I was thinking the other day that about an experience. This seems so random. I suppose it is. I sat at a football game with my dad. I was maybe 5 years old. It must be November because it's cold and the players are, it's snowing hard and the players are covered with mud. You can hardly tell which is the home team, which is the away team. And my dad had some popcorn we were eating and he turned to the guy next to him and offered him the bag of popcorn. And the guy, the old man said, "No, I don't think I want to do that." He said, "Last week, I got one of those popcorn seeds stuck under my tooth there, and I haven't been able to get it out since. It's driving me nuts." Now, Norman, why do I remember that? Why? Yeah. It's so random. When all the things that I should remember in my life, and I remember that experience, there's something there. I don't know what it is. Now, if I start thinking about that very, very much, and I start to go, okay, there's definitely the smell of popcorn there. There's also the smell of cigars or cigarettes there, people smoking around us, and the sound of the football game going on, the announcer's voice, and all this comes. And there's an emotional component to everything that is there. To answer your question, how do you go deeper in this process? There are exercises that can help one to awaken emotionally, to learn how to grab. That's the toughest thing for folks right off. Students will often say the first week in the course, "I'm not getting anything. I'm not grabbing anything." And I hear it all the time and I go, "Yeah, that's right. 'Cause you're not emotionally aware. You're not emotionally awake yet, but keep at this and you'll start to wake up." And then you start to see things all around you. I would have sat in that tub and made a shadow and then dried off and gone to sleep and nothing would have ever happened had I not been awake. I would have walked by that field of spider webs and not thought another thing. That might end up being a really powerful illustration at some point. I'm thinking that's the direction that it could go, but I don't know. It's not an idea yet. It's still just a thought. It's just an experience that I had, but I think there's power in it. But I would have walked by had I not trained my brain, had I not created a neural pathway by practicing this day after day. It takes about 3 weeks. You've probably heard this, Norman. It takes about 3 weeks to create a habit. I heard that my whole life. Neuroscientists now say that's actually true. It does. It's not a strong habit, but it's you've actually started. You've created a neural pathway in about 3 weeks. If you repeat that cycle two or three times, so you're up to about 3 months, it becomes a very, very strong neural pathway, and that habit is actually permanent at that point.
Oh, well, that's good news. I've been doing this podcast for about 6 months, so I guess I'm in the habit of doing it. That's good to hear that maybe I'll be able to continue it pretty easily.
You bet.
I like hearing that science element of it as well, you know, just kind of recent brain science that we've learned that kind of just, you know, matches what you're saying about creativity. Why don't you take us a little bit, just give us a little preview, I guess, of your course. So what do you take people through if they sign up?
Yeah, the idea is to help them to create the habit of creativity. And that means That means practicing grabbing and interrogating and transforming over a period of time through a series of exercises that we do. The course itself is, it drips out for 6 weeks. It's 15, 16 hours, I guess, of video that's involved in it. There's teaching. I do teaching in it, but also there are some very fun performances. There are interviews with creative people. I've got songwriters and actors and theater directors. I've got the maestro of the Hollywood Bowl, and I've got one of the finest drummers in the nation right now, rock and roll drummers in the nation. So I talked to these creative people, and it was really fun for me to. I actually kind of coined this process, GIT. I mean, I didn't make up what creativity is, obviously, but I found this. This is what I've been doing all of these years. And as I talked to these creative people at the top of their fields, I would ask them, what's the creative process? And they would start talking about it. And then I would explain what this grabbing, interrogating, and transforming. And their eyes would just light up because they would say, oh my goodness, that's a great, I hadn't thought about that before. Yesterday, I went to an antique store and there was a guy in there. He's a metal worker. And I said, what's your creative process? He goes, I don't have a creative process. He said, there's no process. I'll just be walking along and I'll see a rock and I'll think, man, I got to have that rock. So I'll grab the rock out of the forest. I'll take it back and put it in my shop and look at it. Well, even from what we've been talking about right here, Norman, you can see I started smiling right away. I said, okay, you said there's no process, but you grabbed that rock. Mm-hmm. Why did you grab that? I don't know why I grabbed a rock. There's just something about that rock that excited me. So I grabbed the rock. Well, that he literally is grabbing, right? He's grabbing something that grabbed him. So that's what the course is. It's the process of helping people to develop these neural pathways of the creative habit. That's when it gets fun, because you don't have to think about it anymore. It's happening all the time, and it just gets fun to do. Think about it. When you get up in the morning, Norman, I don't know which one it is, but you always put on your right shoe first or your left shoe first, one or the other. But you always do it the same way every single morning. In fact, your listeners now, I'm talking to all the listeners, think about that. Try when you tomorrow morning to put on the other shoe first. It will mess up your day. Or when you get out of the shower or out of the bath and you start drying off, it's like choreography. You do it exactly the same every morning or every evening. Exactly the same. You don't think about it. Well, that's the point. You don't have to think about how to dry yourself, or you don't have to think about how to get dressed, because you do it exactly the same every day. And that's what we're trying to develop. That's what I'm trying to develop to help people with in terms of grabbing, interrogating, transforming, to develop this creative habit so that it gets easy, because that's when it gets exciting.
That is great. I'm going to try that tomorrow. I actually didn't know that I always put on my shoes, you know, either on my left foot or my right foot. So I'm going to pay attention to that tomorrow.
Oh yeah.
That'd be interesting. Maybe I'll send you a quick email. It's the left foot. I get that, you know, anybody that takes your course is going to delve into this and develop a habit. This is a kind of a selfish question, but it might apply to some of our other listeners who are entrepreneurs. How would I maybe, you know, just give us a little taster of how would I incorporate creativity into my life? For example, I'm in the process of, you know, I have this podcast going, I'm really happy with it, but I want to develop further offerings for my business. How might I incorporate the creative process into my day so that I'm, you know, kind of writing it, you know, I'm doing that kind of grabbing, interrogating, and transforming process?
To do the process, interrogating, you probably would, if you're a business person and you're in the office, you're probably not going to do a lot of interrogating right in the office, but you can be grabbing all day long, grabbing. You'll just see things. little thoughts. Some of them will actually be ideas, like, I wonder if I could do this. I wonder if I could involve that person in this process. And you grab it. Because it, honestly, if you don't grab it, it's gone. I mean, you might remember it at the end of the day. You might remember it in 5 minutes, but you probably won't. So you need to grab it in some way so you've got it there. So grabbing is something you do all day long. Maybe you'd find yourself when if somebody says to you in the office, you know, we got a half an hour, you've got to do this. We've got to come up with some ideas for this. Then you're back and you're interrogating in a hurry. Is there anything in here that I can use? Is there anything that we can use that would help me to solve the problem that I have right now? That's what you're doing. That's what creativity is. It's problem solving, isn't it? I mean, that's the process. And it's the same excitement to solve a problem well or to solve a problem creatively as it is to write a story or to paint a painting or to write a song. It's creating the habit of doing it. I don't know other people's businesses, but I do know that if they're not creative, probably those businesses are not going to last a long, long time. Things are going to change. The world's going to change, and they're going to be left behind. So it's I'm convinced it's a very, very important process for anybody.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I'm actually thinking of, and I might not get the details of this right, but Steve Jobs kind of talked about his process, I think, in that graduation speech that he gave, where, you don't know what details are going to be important until you look back and connect the dots. And he took a calligraphy class in mm-hmm. college just kind of randomly. And then that ended up really informing the software that he ended up creating later in life that, you know, he put into, you know, the Apple computers and so forth. So I'm just thinking about that in relation to, you know, we don't know, you know, even as an entrepreneur, I might still want to write down that detail about the dew on the spider webs, right? Like mm-hmm. I don't want to limit myself to just thinking about business related things. It's just kind of grabbing everything as you go, right? It's just like, oh, well, that's interesting.
Yeah. Even in business related things, I would contend that if you had that experience of walking and you saw the spider webs and that grabbed you emotionally, you should grab it. You shouldn't be going, that doesn't have anything to do with my business. It has nothing to do with, I'm not going to, why would I, that has nothing to do with what I'm going to be doing today. No. It grabbed you emotionally. You're running this company or you're working for this company and that grabbed you emotionally. So you need to grab it back because there may be a key in that. You don't understand it now, but that there may be a key in that that's going to open up a whole world at the office in your business that you hadn't even thought about. Certainly, if you're a communicator, it's important in business to be a good communicator. If you need to communicate things to your company or you need to communicate things to your boss, you should be grabbing those things all the time because I'm thinking that's probably an illustration, but maybe not. But it may open up truths that you can't get to right now. But it's this emotional world when you wake it up, it begins to bring you things that you're going to need there. It's mysterious, yep. Norman. It really is. It's mysterious.
It is. Yeah. Life is mysterious. And I think it's great. You know, this conversation is just reminding me to just kind of be in touch with that, you know, and to be in touch with that, the creative element that's within all of us, like you said.
Yeah. Here's a quick story. Most of your listeners are familiar with Sting, one of the greatest musical artists of the last 100 years, certainly one of the most popular of the 100 years. He's been nominated 38, 39 times. I think he's won a dozen Grammys. I mean, it's just amazing what this guy has done. He tells in his TED talk about having all of this success in his career, and then one day he wakes up at the height of it all. He's got all these gold records and platinum records all over the walls in his house and all these Grammys on the shelf, and he can't write. He's got nothing. And it lasted for 8 years. He didn't write a song for 8 years. Now, I find myself going, how's that even possible? I mean, this guy's written so many hundreds of songs and recorded them and all this success. How could he not write a song? He wasn't able. He had nothing. He couldn't do it. And but what happened then is he began thinking that, well, my career's done. I can keep singing my old songs, but I'm done making songs. I'm done creating new stuff. And he began to reflect upon his childhood back in the shipbuilding town that he grew up in the UK. And he began to hear the dialect of the men that he worked with, that he heard there, his dad's dialect. And he wrote a couple little songs, just a couple little things in dialect. It moved him. His childhood memories moved him, so he grabbed what he was feeling there. So he's waking up emotionally, in other words. It moved him emotionally. So he wrote a couple little verses. Didn't even have music to him. Just wrote a couple little rhyming things in the dialect. And then he added a little chord to it. He broke through. He wrote a song. And then he wrote another song in the dialect of people from his childhood. And another. And it became the Broadway musical, The Last Ship, which I think is running in the West End as we're speaking right now. It ran for, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 months on Broadway. I saw it in Chicago. Wonderful show, all in the dialects that he grew up with. And the point being that he went back to something that grabbed him emotionally, and he wrote from that. Now, listen, I'm not a business person, so I don't pretend to understand exactly how this translates into the business world, but I do know that Sting is a human being. I'm a human being. You're a human being. Everybody in the business world is a human being, and what causes us to tick is that emotional world. And if it's dead, then we are as well.
You know, this occurs to me that I have this recurring quote that I keep going back to, which is by the civil rights activist Howard Thurman, which says, don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive and go do it, because what the world needs is people who have come alive. And it's, you know, what you're talking about here is exactly that. And even in the creative process, right? Somebody like Sting or like yourself, you could be at the height of your, or let's just say a business person, an entrepreneur could be at the height of their success, but they feel dry inside, right? So it's continuing to ask that question, what makes me come alive? You know, what really connects with me emotionally? So I really like that, you know, like we always need to keep asking ourselves that question.
That's right.
Yeah. So just to wind things down, just a couple of questions I like to ask people. You've done so much in your career as a comedian and an artist and now a teacher. But looking towards the future, do you have the term I like to use is your cringeworthy vision, a vision so big that it makes you cringe to think about sharing it with anybody else. Some people have it, some people don't, but do you have a vision of what you'd like to do going forward?
I do indeed. I have created now, about 20 years ago, I had people saying to me, you know, you've got to pass the baton on now to the younger generation. And I remember my response was, I have a baton? I didn't know I had a baton. Nobody gave me a baton that I can recall. But I realize now at my age, I'm 65, and I realize I do have a baton that I can pass on. And it is this creativity stuff. And I've created this amazing course, Mastering the Craft of Creativity. And in the first months, I've now sold 30 some courses. And of those 30, about half of the students have actually begun, which kind of amazes me. I would think you buy a course, you're going to take it, but apparently that's not the way it is. Half of them have actually embraced the course and have really dived in. And those people have expressed nearly to a person that it's one of the best things they've ever done, that the course has changed their lives. And nothing could make me more excited than hearing that, to know that I've helped someone come alive creatively, which honestly means that I've helped them to actually come alive. And I have a cringe-worthy vision of reaching many, 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 many hundreds of people in the next few years. And that's cringe-worthy because it's a tremendous challenge, a tremendous marketing challenge to pull that off. And of course, I'm like everybody else. You go, well, it probably won't happen. Well, it doesn't matter. I just hear those thoughts that go through my mind, and I go, well, then, all right, well, it's not going to happen if we don't do something. So I have a vision of working hard on this in the coming years, passing the baton on in a really significant way to the folks who are coming behind me.
Love it, Bob. I love that you're, you know, sharing that your creative experience with people. And hey, let's go big here. Let's say thousands of people, millions of people, maybe.
That's
that
right.
Be reached but, by this.
Well, it's
this
a big course. It's a big world, isn't it? I mean, I say many, many hundreds, and again, my wife would say you're thinking too small, and I probably am, because it's a huge English speaking world out there, and beyond that, it's even bigger with other languages. So yeah, it could be thousands, and that's why it's cringeworthy. Because that's thinking really big, but that's fun to do as well. Yeah,
I
would love to. I would love to put together a web page address just for your listeners. Why don't we call it bobstromberg.com/hellyes? And if your listeners go there. I'll have a page so they can check out my course, Mastering the Craft of Creativity. But I'll also have, I've got a free 30-minute training video, which I tell people, gee, even if you didn't buy the course, this could change your life. And I do believe that. And I've got a fun quiz there. It takes about a minute to take, but it's actually the real deal. The name of the quiz is, Are You As Creative as Steve Martin? And Ooh. most people would say, well, I don't think I need to take the quiz to answer that. I think I already know the answer, but they might be surprised. So, all that will be on that page there as well.
Love it. Thanks so much for that offer. And we will have the link that Bob just mentioned in the show notes for the Bob's episode page. And thanks so much for offering that. So basically, it sounds like that will be the place to send our listeners. But is there any other place that you want to make us aware of on the internet where we can find you? Or is that the place to go?
Oh, well, if people want to check out my stuff, bobstromberg.com, I've got lots and lots of videos there. Also, if you just Googled me, Bob Stromberg Hand Shadows or Bob Stromberg Slideshow, it pops up immediately at the top of the list there. And there's a lot of fun stuff that your listeners could look at. And also, for folks out there who are involved in putting on conferences, all kinds of events, my main work is fundraising banquets. I raise money for lots and lots of organizations all around the country. Lots of appreciation things for corporations, volunteer appreciation nights, all kinds of organizations that I come and speak at. It's always I always use a lot of humor, but I'm happy to come and just do comedy if you'd like, but also to speak on creativity as well if folks would like that.
Awesome. I'm sure people can get in touch with you through your website, Bob. And, you know, anyone out there listening, it sounds like Bob would be a great fit for your event or conference. Okay, so Bob, I always like to round things out by saying hell yes on the count of three with my guest. Are you ready to do that?
I'm ready.
Okay. One, two, three. Hell yes. All right, Bob. Thanks so much for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you, Norma.
Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Hell Yes Life podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite RSS feed. If you like the show, please leave a rating and review. And if you want to stay connected, visit hellyeslife.com and sign up for the e-newsletter and private Facebook group. Again, I'm Norman Bell. Thanks for joining me. Now let's get out there and live a hell yes life.